You are the king. Yeah, yeah, I love that. King of the class, man. Take your crown, king. Crown, king. Crown, king.
The Beyond the Tale of Debrief, part two.
And I'm here for. Let me say this, like, our job at LEO is difficult, right? So one of the things that the New York Times article points out is that the detective Crossgrove said that he could not really remember, like, it was just like a white and black TV screen just going back and forth. He really couldn't remember how everything was going out, how it was playing out. So there's this thing called use of force science, right? And pretty much it teaches law enforcement officers what to expect if you ever get in a situation like that. Some people, the adrenaline kicks in, survival instincts kick in, your limbic nervous system spikes up, your serotonin goes down, and all of a sudden you are in this innate survival mode. Like, and people have described how, like, they become super visual and, like, they can actually see the bullet, or they become super audio and they start hearing things that they never really heard. Or they become super tactile. And they start feeling like they remember how they cold or whatnot. And so in those moments, it's possible that, one, you just really struggle to recall in your long-term memory of what happened. A lot of times officers don't really remember right after the shooting because they're still trying to calm down from the adrenaline rush. And then you also have this long-term effect. Like, you can take a day or two and allow yourself to kind of settle and you'll start remembering more things. But it's reasonable that one of the things he said he thought there was a long gun. He thought it was a rifle or AR-15. And they did not find an AR-15. They found it was a handgun. And someone could easily perceive that as, like, you know, him not being honest or him not being forthright.
Right.
But the reality of it is that your mind will perceive a bigger threat than actually exists, right? So you have, like, perception versus perspective, and that perspective talks about what it measures to be, right? So you can look at LeBron James and say he's 6'9", right? That's perspective. It's a standard. Perception of LeBron James is that dude tall.
That dude is tall.
Right, yes. That's how you feel about it. That's like, that's your opinion, yep. Mm-hmm. of him measured to that standard, right? That dude is tall. So, like, his perspective was, I mean, clearly it was a firearm, mm-hmm. but his perception, how he felt about that firearm, when that adrenaline rush hits you, right. you that gun looked like it's right in front of you. He probably had a visual enhancement, and probably felt that gun was right in his face.
Exactly.
And was like, oh man, he's in here with a long gun. Mm-hmm. And so it started returning fire.
Right. So to put it in, like, a layman's perspective.
Thanks.
My girlfriend is deathly afraid of snakes. Mm. She really is. And again, you know, moved into this nice community with this huge backyard. She goes outside one day to take the trash out, dump the trash, comes running back in the house and says, oh my God, there's a huge snake on the patio back there. Yeah. Go get it.
Yeah, go get it.
It's huge. Well, baby, what does the snake look like? I don't know. It's black. It's really, really long. And it's really, really huge is the words that were used. CVC goes out on the patio to look for this huge snake. Believe it or not, I have my gun in my hand because I'm expecting a huge snake.
Which, by the way, mm-hmm. if it's a handgun...
Yeah.
Probably ain't gonna do
nothing to that snake. Nothing. Probably gonna miss.
You probably run off with a shovel or something.
Again, to put this all in perspective, what C-Dub is saying, I go out to look for this huge snake, And this snake is actually about 9 inches long.
Oh, man.
And it's clearly a baby. But because of her fear of this object, of this snake, of this thing, because she has this fear of this thing, that thing is huge to her.
Yeah.
So if we take it back to what C-Dub was saying about the officer seeing a gun or hearing a voice, it's that factor of, number one, the unknown, some fear, because if you're not scared while you're out serving these warrants, there's something psychotically wrong with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
a gun. You got to have courage.
So to put it all in perspective, yes, our mind kind of sort of does make things bigger than they are at times because of those factors.
That
force science that he was talking about.
Yeah. And so I think that, like, when we look at, to try to further understand, like, the officer's perspective of it. So there's a lot of times too where I think sometimes, especially when you're a detective, you can do so many search warrants that you can kind of like take for granted the safety that you're sacrificing and doing those search warrants.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like search warrants are a very common thing, especially when you are a narcotics investigator. And now, and we can talk about how that's changing now with all the marijuana laws kicking in. But for this conversation, those have a significant impact on your ability to recall and be ready and have, be in your tip top mental agility and preparedness and alertness on every search warrant. You got to be there,
right?
You got to be ready for it. And I think that, like, sometimes having the offender already in custody, having the main target in custody, thinking it's going to be something slight, probably nonchalantly banging on the door. Not saying he did this. Right. I'm just saying I've seen this happen. Like, nonchalantly banging on the door. Just fortunately, it didn't end that way. Right. You know what I mean? Or sometimes it can be difficult for officers in order to consistently and to do their job perfect every time. Right. Because in some jobs, you can get away with, you know, not doing something right the correct way.
Right.
And the consequences are very small. In law enforcement, if you mess up one time unintentionally, the consequence can be huge
and catastrophic.
I mean, we're talking, and of course, it impacts the citizen that's involved, right, or the property that's involved. But it also impacts the department that's involved, and it also impacts the community that supports that department, and it also impacts that officer.
Right.
So, like, you know, being in that moment, I get it. Like, I don't think the guy did anything malicious. I don't think he, at least from what I see here, I don't think he went in there and said, like, you know,
I'm going to kill somebody.
He correct. Did not say that. I don't think he did that at all. And as a matter of fact, I don't even think that he, it sounds like he didn't even perceive a threat.
Right.
Right? Just nonchalant. But if you aren't going through the, if you aren't prepared to take that risk and put yourself in danger every time, and therefore do your calculated decision making to increase your survivability,
right,
you're gonna get caught off guard, and unfortunately, if you get caught off guard one time in law enforcement, all it takes is one time. You know what I mean? And so that is the pressure. You know what I mean? That law enforcement officers deal with. Like I said, the things that led up to this moment, they could have been way better. You know what I mean? And I think, and him responding in that way while I was in that building, that's how anyone would respond, right? If someone was shooting at you, you would shoot back. I'm not saying he was justified. I'm not saying he was right. I'm just saying that most people, especially who carry firearms, if somebody's shooting at you, you're probably going to shoot back. Right? That's just an innate response.
Right.
And I think that kind of rules out any maliciousness or malice, premeditated thought, any of that. What I think it all comes down to, though, is the decision-making leading up to that moment did it make his behavior negligent?
Right.
And not from a conviction like he's guilty of that, because that would have to be proven in court. And, you know, that would require the explanation of this evidence by experts better than me, by attorneys who've been doing it.
Right.
However, from a probable cause perspective, from a grand jury perspective, it kind of feels like maybe there's some...
There.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, that's a, and that's a police phrase. There's some there. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So, I guess we belabored that a little bit longer than I expected, but, I mean, it's all good. The article goes on to talk about how skeptical the jurors were of the testimonies. They were asking questions about whose name was on a search warrant and what officers saw when the doors opened, and whether the officers knew that Jamarcus Glover, the ex-boyfriend of Ms. Taylor, was already, who was the target of the investigation, whether they knew he was already arrested. So the jurors have had several questions, and I'm looking at this last part of this article, and...
Oh, in the article that he is referring to is from the New York Times, published October 2nd, 2020.
So they did want
to follow along.
Yeah. If y'all so choose, and I've chose this one because, like I said, it had the most detail. But if when you look at the he said he didn't recover any drugs or money because the apartment was not searched after the shooting.
Yeah. So, question.
Why wasn't the apartment
searched? If you have a warrant and your warrant kind of sort of intimates drug and paraphernalia and the things that go along with it, after you concluded the service of this warrant, why was there no search conducted and evidence collected?
You know, so that, well, there had to be some type of. Used for narcotic purposes, right? So, like, yes, like, why are we, not only are we not searching, now, granted, I'm not saying, like, so, yes, it's a traumatic moment, don't get me wrong, right? Mm-hmm. So, you go in there for a search warrant, shooting happens, shots fired, citizens coming out, people come rushing out to get you, blue lights everywhere, ambulance trucks out there, you got citizens coming out trying to see what's going on, you got yellow tape everywhere, everybody's asking if you're okay, you're going to have the chief coming out there, you probably have the city manager come out, it's just... It's going to be a lot, chaos. Right? It's going to be a huge case. At some point, the case is given to either a supervisor to kind of govern the. They're going to develop a incident command system, and they're going to have a supervisor overview, but make sure that once we knock out getting the people taken care of, mm-hmm. now we have to take care of the scene.
The scene, right?
And to not. After all that rush, right? At some point, once all the rush is done, it has to be more of a smoothing, a calming, where you can sit back and say, now, let me make sure we execute and take all things. You forget to do the search warrant. So, like, the chance of you uncovering drugs, it matters to me if there were drugs to be recovered.
Right.
I mean, that to me, that is significant because it shows, okay, granted, whether or not drugs were recovered does not invalidate the search warrant.
Right.
The search warrant is valid because of the probable cause, not because of the drugs that were there. So that's clear. But when somebody dies, I want to know if there were actually drugs recovered. And here's the other thing. They didn't do a diagram of the scene.
Right.
So a diagram is just another way of saying whenever you see crime scene text on your favorite police investigative show, mapping out the scene, drawing a sketch of the body, looking at blood splatter, identifying shell casings, doing there. It's very scientific. They're doing the XY graph. I mean, this is key in all homicides. It wasn't done. Come on, man. Come on, no evidence search. No, it must have been, it must have been so hectic. And now, granted, this can happen. It's just a disappointment that it didn't, right. And then it happened. You know what I mean? Like it's very possible to get flustered and panic, and everything goes wrong, and people miss steps. You know that can happen, but should it happen? No, it should not happen. And then, or last but not least, and we all know this, it's just that they didn't have the body cameras turned on. So, with all these factors that I'm listing out, you know, certain departments, you can get fired for not having a body camera on.
Right.
The body camera, I was here before the body camera phase. I've been here during the body camera phase. And I will say the body camera is one of the best things that has happened, because a lot of citizens who might have made complaints that were illegitimate have been disproven.
Right.
A lot of lawsuits have been prevented by the body camera. But it also helps the citizens feel comfortable and have more of a verification, you know, like Reagan said, trust but verify, right? So like we allow citizens to verify the performance of these law enforcement officers while they're on scene. So the question is if you don't have your body camera on, you're not taking the diagram of the scene, you're not collecting the evidence that you said you're there looking for, my trust in you and in this department,
way down.
Oh my gosh.
It's so then, non-existent.
So then when I go further up and I'm looking at, okay, well, the FBI says the bullet came by this gun, even though they said theirs didn't. Right. And then I go up and they say the attorney general will release what he said, but all of a sudden, and we know that, you know, it's just the AG and the grand jury, and all of a sudden now you aren't able to tell us what he said, but we do know that he came on the press conference and said that the officers were justified, but we were expecting the jury to deliberate whether or not they were justified.
Right.
I mean, you throw in the fact that, like I said, he was expecting someone there. He heard a voice. He expected a woman to be there who had no criminal record. She voiced herself. And they knocked for 2 minutes at nighttime when people are sleeping. I mean, you know what I mean? They already had the guy arrested. When I look at all of this,
The totality
of the circumstances, which is another way of putting together probable cause.
Right.
I feel like there is reason to believe that there is some neglectful behavior that led to the death of someone.
Oh, right.
Right? And then here's the other thing. Because the search warrant process was so bad, one of the things that the AG said in his press conference was that they were going to review the search warrants is processed for the state and put a committee together and I guess try to come up with a way to make sure it's done effectively. Which reminded me of this phrase and used in law enforcement called lawful but awful. Lawful but awful is a phrase that's used to describe a lot of officer-involved shootings or use of force incidents that met the legal threshold but just really looked horrible.
From
bad.
A non-law enforcement perspective.
From a law enforcement perspective.
Horrible.
Horrible. And honestly, from a law enforcement perspective, it could still look horrible. But from a legal, whether they were legally justified in it, it was legal.
It was legal.
And so what we have here, what you would hear a lot of law enforcement people say was like, hey, all of this is ugly. Mm-hmm. It's horrendous. I hate that it happened. I hate to see that it happened. But whether or not this was illegal, you will hear some law enforcement people say they don't know.
They don't know.
Right. There's a chance that they believe that this could have been all legal behavior and they're going to trust the system to determine whether it was legal. But so that is the perspective of the law enforcement side. So it's like, hey, it doesn't look bad. It doesn't look great at all. There needs to be new training. There needs to be people fired. You know, there needs to be this. But was it legal? That's one thing. But from a black community side, it's like, and is what other profession can you be lawful and awful?
Right. And still be employed.
And still be employed.
And still be employed or not indicted.
And not indicted. Like,
right.
If I'm a plastic surgeon,
mm-hmm.
and you come out of this surgery with like one hip bigger than the other, or you come out missing more of your prostate than you were expecting.
Right.
Right. I mean, is it? It was a lawful surgery.
Mm-hmm.
It was just awful. Yeah, right. That guy's getting sued for malpractice. Yeah, I mean, civilly. Yeah, what are you talking about? We're talking about if you were at Burger King and you slipped and put your glove in somebody's bag when you were handing out their food, which sounds disgusting, by the way. But it was just you can get fired.
Right.
And then Burger King will get sued.
That's right. Right. And we're not minimizing people.
Not at all.
We're not doing not that. It's, these are just examples.
And what I'm pointing out is that either you can be a medical doctor right. with all this schooling profession, or you can be a 15, 16-year-old who works at McDonald's. The lawful but awful standard does not apply.
Does not apply.
But when you apply it, mm-hmm. but is used mm-hmm. to describe law enforcement.
Right.
And so that's what the Black community is saying. It's like, why is lawful but awful acceptable for us?
Yeah.
Or even worse,
that's right.
why is lawful but awful acceptable for only us? Because if it's somebody else that doesn't look like us, that looks more like you,
right.
then lawful and awful are hand in hand at that point.
And I'm going to jump ahead a little bit to another podcast that we are going to get to dealing with two words, qualified immunity. Mm. We'll get to that podcast.
Definitely. We got to touch on that.
When we get to that. The lawful but awful that'll come into play.
Right, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So we're definitely going to get to that. I think this is probably a good time to just stop. Because if we keep going, we're just going to be jumping from subject matter to subject matter.
Yeah.
I think these are questions we have. I'm not making a final decision. I do not envy being in an office position. I know at any day at doing this job that I could easily be an officer on a team.
Right. I could be on
you know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, I don't take for granted that this officer has a tough job and is in a tough situation. And at the same time, I know any day I can be somebody can be, or I know can be Breonna Taylor mm-hmm. in their house.
Right.
right. And that's the juxtaposition of being Black guys in law enforcement. It's like, I can be either one. I can identify. And identifying, that's a whole nother podcast. We setting y'all up, man. I got to tune back in. But look, the identify piece is key, though. Because, and I'll just touch on this part of it because I ain't going to go too far. If I grew up in a all-white community, all white community, I'm just gonna leave it like that. And then I stayed in that community, and then I went to a college and it was a largely public white institution, and then, or even though private, whatever. But, and then I decide that I want to come to this minority community to police. I'm now policing people that I may not identify with.
Right.
On a deeper level, I'm policing people that I did not even have. I didn't have to go through the practice of identifying with people that I did not look like me because I was raised in a community where they all look the same.
Right. And you don't have a cultural basis mm-hmm. to police from.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. All right. We got to stop.
That's another podcast topic.
All right. Well, look, man, it's been a pleasure. Like, we hope this comes across clear as possible. We know that we kind of get, delve in on the topics a little bit. And we know we kind of get deep into the lingo, but we'll get better. I mean, this is like the beginning for us. And we just really want this to be a resource. We want it to be a resource for the Black community and the Blue community. We hope that we can articulate the difficulty of the job, whether it's the legalities of it, and have some opinion, but not too much to the point where we like offend everybody. Right. Our goal is, if we offend people, but that's not our goal, that's right? Our goal is to try to like help people understand each side, each perspective, and like why people may be upset. People are protesting outside because it's not even probable cause,
right? There's no rhyme or reason for a lot of things. People are protesting because they don't know.
Like that's all it is. Like this is not even probable cause,
really. Right?
And I think that's what people make like, man, like it's not even probable that this happened. And I think when you ask those questions, I think people become like, okay, well, I can understand. I had these conversations with my coworkers. Right, I had these conversations in my job, and I think that like I can make a small difference with the one person, two people who are willing to have that conversation. But I feel like having them on this platform can make that difference as far as on a larger audience perspective. Kind of scales, use a millennial term, it scales us out. It's a scalable platform. But I think that makes a big difference as far as our ability to understand both sides, to understand why people are protesting, and to understand why police officers are. You know, or people in my community are looking at protesters like they're not they're overreacting or they're not reacting right. appropriately because they ultimately will admit that it's awful, but they won't agree that it's illegal.
That's right. Again, the future podcast, the cultural basis for being able to police specific or certain communities.
Absolutely. So we care about our people, man.
Yeah.
And then the police, black people aren't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Policing isn't going anywhere.
As a matter of fact, according to some sources, the black people are going to be taking over. Really, really soon.
Well, hey, look, I need to see that source. But you know what though? Like, I think that there's a significant increase in minority population in the country, and I know that there's a lot of ways of looking at that and how that impacts policing as well. And hopefully, we can get to that. I think that once people in our community can see things from another person's perspective. And have the right questions to ask to, in politics, have the right questions to ask to your press, right. to the leaders of the community, to the chief, to the city manager, to the councilwoman or, you know, councilman, whatever. These are, I feel like the right questions are going to help us get the progress we need. Right. All right, y'all. I'm going to shut it down. You ready to shut it down, CBC?
Ready to shut it down. Hey, just want real quick, again, C-Dub did say that we touched on a lot of topics. And some of the topics that we touch on, you might be scratching your head and saying, what the heck are they talking about?
Right, right.
But if you have those kinds of questions, one more time, give that
And we are on the Black Cop Podcast at gmail.com, the blackcoppodcast@gmail.com.
That's right.
And follow us on Instagram at the Black Cop Podcast. Follow like our Facebook page on the Black Cop Podcast. Just look up, type in Black Cop Podcast. It's pretty much you're gonna find us there. Instagram, Facebook. We're gonna have a YouTube page shortly, and you know, just post some like material on like officer safety, how to survive a traffic stop. How to handle police and citizen interaction. So hopefully those things make a difference. You know what I mean? And this is the conversation that, this is not the neighborhood watch conversation that I go to while I'm at work. This is the conversation I have with my family, my brothers and sisters, and how we can try to ask the right questions, get the right answers, and survive our and improve our interactions. So again, at the Black Cop Podcast and also the Black Cop Podcast at gmail.com. All right, y'all. And look, and also, we are open to donation. If y'all feel like y'all like what y'all hear and y'all want to support us or y'all want to help us keep this thing going, feel free. We will have our PayPal and Cash App accounts open, and you guys can just chime in and give what you can if you so choose. But anything will help. And let us know. Give us some feedback. Yeah, if we can huge. Constructive.
Yep.
Criticism. Mm-hmm. Don't give me no BS. You know what I mean? Like, look, if there's some legitimate ways that we can improve, I will really look into it because ultimately I want to give a good product. I just don't want to give good information. I want to give a total good production. And we really want to improve that and as we go. So if you have some information, please share that with us. Let us know because we ultimately want to. And this is not just, this is for everybody. So proliferate it. Share it with your friends. Share with your coworkers, share with your family. Love y'all. Be safe. Peace.